Welcome to part two of Which Would You Rather? Gastroschisis versus Omphalocele.
So we're hitting on my favorite because I would much rather an Omphalocele.
That is so surprising to me. Why would you rather an Omphalocele?
For me, the Omphalocele is enclosed within a membrane versus just everything's flapping in the wind when the baby's born.
I could see that. I could see having things contained. I feel like there would be, it would be more of a controlled situation with the intestines being contained. Maybe you're not as worried about fluid and electrolyte imbalances.
You still are worried about those things because that membrane is definitely not skin. So you're still losing a lot of that fluid and electrolytes through insensible water loss just with the gastroschisis babies. For me, like you said, it's the control piece of it. With everything is contained and you're not having to make sure that you get all of your intestines in this nice little bag packaged and ready to go versus it's already kind of prepackaged for you, so to speak.
Right.
A little bit easier in the very beginning, but in the long term, I think I like the Omphalocele. They make you use your brain more. They make you work harder. They're usually
Okay.
not easy patients to take care of at all. And I enjoy that piece of being challenged.
Okay. Let's start at the delivery of the Omphalocele. Let's actually go to when the Omphalocele and gastroschisis are typically diagnosed. They're typically diagnosed at that anatomy scan prenatally. Your gastroschisis is going to be associated with an increased alpha fetal protein. Sometimes that is drawn, when that's drawn prenatally and it's elevated, then that's reported to the ultrasound tech. And let me go back. Gastroschisis and Omphalocele are typically diagnosed at the prenatal ultrasound, the anatomy scan. You can see that the intestines are not contained within the abdominal cavity at that 18 to 20 week ultrasound, or you can see that the intestines are in this membrane. You can see the anomaly. Gastroschisis is associated with an increase in alpha fetal protein. That's not a definitive diagnosis. It just flags. It's a flag that says we need to look for something else. Michelle, let's talk a little bit about delivery of a baby with an Omphalocele. We know with the gastroschisis, they used to prefer, or surgeons used to prefer, babies being delivered with the gastroschisis by cesarean. Was that the same with the Omphalocele?
I feel like they both kind of followed the same course with it being a preferred cesarean section and then now more vaginal deliveries. I know with the Omphalocele, one of the big things that the OBGYN would have to be concerned with is when you're cutting into the mom to deliver the Omphalocele via the C-section, you have to be very careful not to cut that membrane because if you cut that membrane, your Omphalocele goes from being a nice packaged intestines in a membranous sac versus you've now made this baby a gastroschisis, so to speak, because you've now cut into that sac, that wall that was holding in the intestine. So I think you kind of same similar course, vaginal versus cesarean. I believe that in general, doctors are trying to get away from cesarean sections as much as possible and do more vaginal deliveries.
That is a fact. That is
Definitely.
a fact, jewel statement. We are definitely, as a society, moving away from cesarean sections. When the baby gets, okay, so the baby's delivered now in the delivery room and you stabilize the baby, what does stabilization look like?
So these kids tend to have a higher incidence of RDS versus a gastroschisis baby, just because this membranous sac is laying on the abdominal cavity and it's heavy. So the baby's having to try to move and breathe with this basketball, the small basketball sitting on their abdomen. So a lot of them do get intubated fairly quickly after delivery because they do need the extra help or support respiratory wise. These babies, same electrolyte and fluid imbalances that you want to watch. They larger surface, so larger and sensible water loss. From that aspect, don't tend to weep as much as a gastroschisis kid does. So that takes some of the extra fluid loss away from it. The one thing with these babies, you can't see the intestines. So you can't see if they're dusky. You can't see if they're malrotated. And a lot of times you can't see what's out. You can have all of your intestinal your abdominal cavity organs out in that membranous sac as well as you, as a gastroschisis kid does. These kids also, because of the way that this defect happens, typically have issues with their muscular system. They typically don't walk. A lot of them don't have control of their bowels or their urinary tract. So they have a lot more challenges in life versus a gastroschisis baby, but I find them very interesting and I enjoy taking care of them.
Yeah, thalassemias have a pretty high rate of associated anomalies. About 50% of babies with thalassemias have either trisomy 13 or 18. There's other anomalies associated. Thalassemias, in short, are very strongly associated with other anomalies. They may have some sort of neurological anomaly, any kind of like a meningocele. So when we're talking about the thalassemia, when the intestines are out of the abdominal cavity, the defect in the abdominal wall is as large as the defect. With a gastroschisis, babies tend to have an open ring in the abdominal wall. So the defect in the abdominal wall is typically relatively small versus the thalassemia. So once the baby's back into the NICU, at what point is surgery consulted?
They're usually given a heads up. They don't come in as quickly with the thalassemia as they do with the gastroschisis, simply because there is a membranous sac that's covering the intestines. But you know, your gastroschisis, they need to get there fairly quickly to get that baby siloed. They usually come in within the first 24 hours. A lot of times, especially if the baby's born during days, we all know day shift, there's more hands available. But if the baby's born during the day, they usually are in that first 12 hours to come in and assess, what treatment's going to be. If we're looking at just, is it a small defect? Are we just looking at maintaining this and it's going to reabsorb itself? Is it a large defect that, because the membranous sac is very thin, are we going to need to look at treating it with some silver nitrate and covering this defect to help keep with the fluid, keep from losing so much fluid? There are multiple different ways that you treat thalassemias. These kids, you're looking at their respiratory status with their lung and their capacity to be able to.
It's okay.
Totally lost the words.
So you're watching respiratory status.
To expand their lungs, to be able to expand the expansion to breathe appropriately. These kids, it's their abdominal wall, like she said, is open to the size of the defect. With that being said, they don't have the musculature system grown to support the intestines that need to go back in to the inside. So you've got a lot of growing, a lot of development that still has to happen with these babies.
How do you get the skin to grow over a large defect with an thalassemia?
It's a very long process. And unfortunately, the mortality rate with the kids that have larger defects is pretty high.
The mortality rate for thalassemia is pretty broad. It's anywhere from 30 to 80%, depending on what other defects the baby has. these babies sometimes have a lot going on.
They do. And it's not typically just the Imfalosil piece of it. I have had a couple of patients that were truly, it was just the Imfalosil. They were there for months. And I feel like we sent a couple home that had to come back and be repaired and closed later. They went home with home health care to manage.
You mentioned silver nitrate. What does that do?
The silver nitrate helps.
I just finished laughing.
I was like, I don't know what it does.
It promotes skin growth over the...
That's where my brain went. And I was like, no, that's not right.
You're like, read my mind, Darla. Jesus.
It was like complete TIA right there. It's like, I don't know what it does.
I don't know. You just put it on. You squeeze it out of the tube. You put it on.
You put it on.
You just put it on the defect.
Put it on like cake icing.
Whoop. Happy birthday.
Oh, Lord. Silver nitrate is used to promote skin growth over this membranous sac. The membrane is very thin. Sometimes it's thin enough that you can actually visualize your intestines to an extent. So we put the silver nitrate on. It encourages skin growth. You wrap it with some Curlex, and you change it a couple times a day and unfortunately hope for the best.
Right. And I think that is kind of the trend with large defects, with the Imfalosils, unfortunately. What have you seen? How do you educate and prepare the parents?
Tell them it's going to be a long road. A lot of times these parents, in addition to the Imfalosil, they're asking the questions about, will my baby ever walk? A lot of these kids don't walk just because there's involvement with the spinal cord and the lower limbs are sometimes atrophied just from laying around and not getting the blood supply that they need to help develop appropriately.
And the abdominal wall really, there isn't muscle with the large defect, and those abdominal wall along with your back muscles are really what help you stand.
Mm-hmm.
So if these babies get to the point where they should be walking, sometimes they need to be almost corseted to support standing.
Yes, they do have a lot of issues with their musculoskeletal system in addition to just the Imfalosil piece of it. The Imfalosils, a lot with their care, run the same course as gastroschisis. They have their replogals placed after delivery to the low intermittent suction. You're looking for that switch over from the dark green bilious fluids to the more clear mucousy fluids. The same course with your starting and stopping feedings frequently. They're not tolerating, or the peristalsis isn't appropriately working. These kids also, because they don't have the muscle within the abdominal cavity to hold their intestines in place, so as the intestines start falling back into that cavity, a lot of times these kids end up with the malrotations and the volvulus or the strictures just because it's floating around in this area and it doesn't really know what to do with itself. Nobody teaches your intestines how to stack on top of each other appropriately. So you have to deal with those kind of issues. Trying to think correction surgery instances with these kids as far as like having to go in and for malrotations. I can't think of very many that I have experienced personally. It's been a lot of getting that membranous sac to grow skin appropriately to help protect the intestines.
I can't think of any baby off of the top of my head that I've seen with an Imfalosil that's been malrotated. I know the defect, when you talk about defects, like they go from being small, they can be small, they can be large. I think the best outcome that I've seen was a small quarter size Imfalosil. baby didn't stay very long in the nursery, was closed quickly, did very well, no other defects. The larger ones, I've heard people experience where they move the baby and the weight of the intestines pushes on that diaphragm, and then you have to kind of just move a baby back to a previous position because they just cannot move air from the pressure on their diaphragm.
That's very true. These kids typically need to be positioned on their sides versus laying on their backs. Definitely no backs to sleep, safe sleep with these kids.
No safe sleep.
They're on their sides to help support the weight.
Back is not best.
No. To support their weight. I'm trying to go through my brain with some of the larger infalacils that I've taken care of. Most of them go home with home health care, and they still have a fairly decent sized anomaly when they go home.
The NICU stay for babies with larger defects is months. This is a months long process in the NICU. Outside of the NICU, you talk about home health. This is years and years of healthcare that these babies need. How do you support? I talk a lot about supporting parents through the process of the NICU. How do you prepare parents for discharge home with home healthcare?
Having a great clinical management team, great discharge nurse, great utilization review team that can get you set up with home health care is key to managing these babies once they go home. There are so many. Social media, with all its bad, has a lot of good for these families that have these not normal or not frequent anomalies that happen.
Right.
There's tons of Facebook pages and support groups out there for families to share their experiences, tips and tricks of how to take care of their baby, getting these parents set up with community resources that are available in your area. Most every NICU has some family that has started some sort of community resource program just as a support system to these families, whether it's helping get them connected with other agencies or getting them connected with other families in the area. So I definitely feel like you need to get these families involved with your community resources, your social workers, your clinical care managers that can help point them in the right direction.
Right. This was a much shorter episode. I think we covered a lot of the management in the gastroschisis part of this, which a lot of the early management is the same. I think what we're seeing for the difference is the outcome of the baby and the long-term care when a baby goes home, and a lot of community support for these parents, these families. With a gastroschisis, babies typically go home and they do very well. We don't really see a lot of long-term complications with a gastroschisis. With the infalacial, we really are talking years of support needed for these babies and their families. That being said, this is a Which Would You Rather two-part series. I would much rather a gastroschisis.
And like I said in the beginning, much rather do an infalacial. I just love the challenge of taking care of those babies.
And I like that. I know that this baby's outcome is a 98% survival rate. We are not talking about long-term complications. The beginning is very stressful. It is a lot of interdisciplinary communication, a lot of teaching with the families. But at the end of the day, I feel like I would rather gastroschisis because I can send this baby home and know that they're going to do very well. Thank you for listening.